So welcome everybody to the Art of Advisory. My name is Hector Garcia, and I'm joined by our guest speaker, Dr. Sean Stein-Smith. Dr. Sean Stein-Smith is the author of Strategic Management Accounting, which is a book you can find in Amazon. He's also a professor, an accounting professor, over at Lehman College in New York City. Dr. Sean Stein-Smith is a CPA, and he sits on the board of the Wall Street Blockchain Alliance, which is a partnership with AICPA to discuss all the issues that we're going to discuss today about reporting, accounting for, and taxation related to blockchain and cryptocurrency. He's also the co-host of the Entrepreneurial CPA, which is a show you can find on YouTube and also in podcast format in any RSS feed that you have or any app you have for podcasting. Dr. Sean, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here, Hector.
Okay, so Dr. Sean, let's start with the first question, and we'll deep dive into that. Sure. I'm an accountant. I'm a small business advisor. My clients come to me all the time with this bombshell of a question, and they're expecting a very easy, simple answer, something that they can walk out satisfied, which is, what is this whole blockchain cryptocurrency thing, and should I or my business be worrying about that?
Awesome. So probably the first thing to say, in that conversation is to first outline that cryptocurrency and blockchain are part of that same ecosystem, but they aren't the exact same thing, right? And that the blockchain is that underlying sort of backbone that in turn powers the entire cryptocurrency space. Or if you want to think about it this way, blockchain is almost like the internet. And I know that out in the marketplace, individuals and firms call it the Internet 2.0, right? And that all of these different cryptocurrencies are applications that run on a blockchain, right? So that is the first point to always hammer home, right? That they're part of the same ecosystem, but they aren't equal. And then as far as the actual blockchain itself, I would honestly say that for most firms right now out there operating in the marketplace, that blockchain is not something that is coming now or in half a year or in 18 months, right? But in 3, 5, 8 years from now, sure. So now is the time to really get yourself sort of up to speed as to how blockchain works, what it is, and then also sort of what are some applications that it can be used for. But as far as the accounting side goes, I'm going to set that whole blockchain conversation on the back burner for now. But the entire sort of cryptocurrency space is honestly where most people, as a CPA, as a bookkeeper, or as a business owner, are being introduced into this whole ecosystem, right? And that whole space has a lot of uncertainty in it still, right? One, because there's not too much guidance out there, right, in terms of how to do the accounting for these cryptocurrencies, right? And the whole cryptocurrency space, it had its start with Bitcoin, but now there are hundreds of coins out there, and there are ICOs going on, and there are airdrops going on, and there are now actually tokens or coins backed by the US dollar called a stablecoin. So so the whole area keeps moving, keeps evolving, and keeps changing. But as far as offering tangible, concrete advice, there are always two questions that I always like to ask. Is it actually worth it for you as a business to take payment in the form of Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ether, or any of the other options out there? And then two, if you decided to then take payment in these cryptocurrencies, are you aware as to how to actually do the bookkeeping for it, how to show it for tax purposes, and also how to show it on your balance sheet?
Okay, thank you for that answer. So let's dial it back a little bit. And I like to look at two perspectives here. Let's look at the perspective of a small business owner tackling this cryptocurrency giant, and then the perspective of the accounting professional that's advising the small business owner on it. So I'm a small business owner, and I'm using QuickBooks or some sort of very popular accounting system. I'm using Excel or regular databases to run my business intelligence data on it. And the only exposure I may have to the blockchain in the short term is maybe someone tells me, hey, you need to move into the blockchain, right? So what you're saying is, and we're going to, the cryptocurrency and the blockchain, let's look at them as two different things. So you're saying is that most small businesses right now need to just be educated at it, need to understand what it is, but don't really need to jump in and buy some other new system that uses the blockchain as the backbone, correct?
Yes. Yeah. I'd say so, yes. Because in the bulk of cases, right, the actual blockchain, you know, programs that are out there aren't easy to use, to install, or to then map over to your QuickBooks or your SAP or your Oracle, right? And all of that takes a large chunk of investment, both in terms of time, people, and financial resources. So yes, I would say that for most firms at this time, the best approach is to sort of keep educating yourself to keep pace in the marketplace versus, you know, going whole hog into the blockchain space.
And let's talk about now the large corporations. So the ones that can afford to retrain, remap, and the ones, and we've seen instances of larger companies trying to sort of replace their databases with blockchain-based databases. Mm-hmm. And I know you provide consulting some of the large firms and large companies on this. What is the comparative advantage that people hope to get by implementing blockchain vis-a-vis replacing their current systems with a blockchain-based system?
Sure. So I'd say probably the most high-profile example right now is that, and while it is an example that has been covered quite a bit, it's probably the most high-profile one out there. And so that is that starting in 2019, Walmart is going to make its food suppliers and partners get on their private blockchain, right? And all that a private blockchain is a blockchain that is basically developed in-house by a organizing firm, right? So in our case right here, IBM partnered with Walmart to build out a private blockchain to help sort of Walmart handle the flow of data in their food transportation areas, right? So even with all the people, the resources, and the expertise of Walmart already in-house, to actually trace back a package of fruit all the way back through to its source point, it took them almost a full week. Now, after building out this pilot program with IBM, right? So two big companies built out a pilot test program. That exact same traceback takes 2.2 seconds. So it's a huge improvement in the transparency and access to information that's already at the firm, right? So I'd say mainly right now, firms that are trying to do that, whether it's in food safety, retail, healthcare, finance, or banking, are trying to get better access and transparency into their data that's already at the firm, and to do so in a much more time-efficient manner.
So I'd like to understand why, like how that works, right? Without getting into the details, but I assume that the difference is that a standard database that we're used to using requires sort of a lot of backtracking, or like sort of a lot number tracking, to backtrace a transaction all the way from the source. But the blockchain in itself, it's built to track every iteration of that piece of data that gets moved around. And you're using the Walmart example, which I assume they're talking about fresh food that they need to know when the expiration date is, or if something was spoiled or needs to be recalled. We need to know exactly where it came from and exactly which stores they are, so we can quickly mitigate a disaster of bringing in a disease or getting people sick. So and we're talking about millions and millions of dollars probably invested mm-hmm. into this, right? Walmart and IBM, these are big bucks. So yes. So if I get this straight, we're going to start seeing next year, the next coming years, these large companies with these sort of pilot programs mm-hmm. where they start implementing blockchains, system in pieces. But mm-hmm. have you seen anything on the small business space, any apps or any companies that provide true value to a smaller company that maybe doesn't have more than $10,000 to invest into this, or not yet?
I would say really, you know, there aren't too many sort of fully fleshed out blockchain options for firms that aren't towards that bigger end, right? I mean, because even to hire a coder or a programmer who has that expertise to actually code out the blockchain and to program it and to help you keep it up to date, that average baseline salary is over 200 grand annually for one coder. So I mean, so right now it does still require quite a bit of upfront investment. But I do also want to point out that there was a very interesting story, and that there was a handset manufacturer, cell phone manufacturer, headquartered over in Asia, and the name right now is escaping me. But last week, or within the last 2 weeks, they actually introduced a phone. No, it was HTC. Introduced a phone that is only able to be purchased either with Bitcoin or Ether. And that on that phone, the end user, right, the individual end user, is able to access apps that run on the Ethereum blockchain. And that as a part of that whole package on the phone, that phone also comes installed with its own cryptocurrency wallet. So there are applications and some products that are being introduced into the marketplace. But as of right now, those products and services are niche, really, products and services. And that really for the SME market, there is not too much yet going on right now. But obviously, you know, it's almost like any other tool, right? The internet, laptops, PCs, or phones, it's always going to start off up here and then gradually work its way into the mass market.
Okay, so to wrap things up on blockchain, so we can move up to cryptocurrency, because that's really, that is the most tangible application of cryptocurrency at the moment.
Yep.
The blockchain is the underlying platform, which is open source, and people can grab that blockchain and create their own type. A blockchain could either be private, like the Walmart example, or it could be public, such as Bitcoin. So we are going to see more and more companies, but it looks like they're experimenting, or they're trying to just be the first ones at it. It doesn't sound like there's some immediate tangible competitive advantages from going all in into blockchain, but it does sound like it's a great career path for young accountants that are looking to stand out. So it sounds like you're probably suggesting to some of your college students that are going to go in accounting, and they're asking you, hey, how do I stand out? How do I get a great job? You're probably telling them, well, on top of being an accountant, also be a blockchain programmer, right?
Absolutely, totally right. I mean, I know I was just on a panel last week, and the overall answer I gave was that if I was doing it over again, majoring in accounting, I would definitely minor or dual major in computer science. Absolutely.
All right, cool. So let's talk about cryptocurrency. So the big cryptocurrencies, the ones that most people hear about, is Bitcoin. And I think most people probably stop at that, Bitcoin. We got Bitcoin, we have Ethereum, Litecoin. Maybe you can mention the top five for us.
Sure. We have Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ether, and XRP are probably the top four currencies out there in terms of trading volume and actually being used. So yeah, and all four of them are, you know, different, and they operate differently. So it's always important to know, from a client point of view, right, which actual cryptocurrencies are being bought or taken as a form of payment, right? Because each of those operates differently.
And that's valuable because, just like in the stock market, you want to ideally work with a currency, and let's call this currency because that's what it is. You want to work with a currency or a security of any sort if you're buying stock that has volume, that has a marketplace. Like, you want to know that, hey, worst case scenario, I can turn this back into dollars pretty easily. So that's why volume matters, right? So when you're out there buying crypto, if you're buying or any sort of cryptocurrency, if you buy something with low volume, you turn the risk of not being able to trade it back into dollars, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I just want to add a point, Hector, there, is that it's important to keep in mind that even if you are using a platform like Binance or Coinbase, right, the two biggest platforms for this trading for individuals, and you are buying and trading Bitcoin, which has about 40% of the market volume and the cap, even if you are doing that, there are still some hiccups that could happen. I know back at the end of 2017, when your price per coin was all the way up at $19,000, $20,000 briefly per coin, people were having trouble accessing Coinbase to actually turn those coins back into cash. And they're having those problems because it's important to always keep in mind that all of the underlying infrastructure for Bitcoin or Litecoin or the whole space at large is only about 8 or 9 years old. So all of it is still new and still evolving and almost having a hard time to keep pace with the volume.
And just to add some context, I mean, this, sure, this video is being, we usually try not to set a date to the video date because we want this episode to be timeless. But when we talk about valuation, it's important to note the date. So we're doing this end of October, and the value of the Bitcoin end of October is around $6,200.
Yep.
There was peak valuation around December of 2017 and January of 2018, mm-hmm, hovering that $18,000 to $20,000 area. And just 6 months before summer of 2017, we were under $1,000. We were, I think, mm-hmm, it was like $200 or $300, something like that. So the first major challenge with Bitcoin in general is that uncertainty of value. Mm-hmm. And that really only matters for folks that are trading, right? That folks are speculating, or they're trading, or they're moving money out of the dollars because they think the US government's not going to be as strong as, you know, the worldwide consensus of the value of Bitcoin or whatever happens to be. But that was that's the first challenge. Now, the, mm-hmm, second challenge is transacting with it, right? So Sean, what's going on with the world of transactions, like taking payment, what do you know about that?
Sure. So really the most high profile sort of software tool to help you take payment, right? Because even though it is called Bitcoin, there are no coins, right? There is no dollar or coins to actually take as a form of payment. And I do know that there are some pilot programs out there where basically Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies are then loaded onto a debit card type of product. But in almost all of those other cases, the easiest way to think of it is basically adding a online payment option, right? Credit card, debit card, PayPal, and then Bitcoin. And so the most high-profile software company out there doing this is BitPay. And basically all that I'd have to do as a business owner is to go download BitPay, you know, into my business, and then add it onto my site or onto my Amazon site as a payment option. Now, doing that is the easy part. Then, after you've gotten paid in the Bitcoin or in any of those other cryptocurrencies, there are two questions, right? For every business owner or every CPA accountant who's offering some advisory services. One, where do you actually keep those coins? And two, how do you show it for tax and a financial statement purpose, right? And so those two questions are different, but they are both important to understand and to have a good grasp on.
Okay, so maybe we could discuss that a little bit since we're more of the, let's move on to like the accounting challenges with it.
Yep.
So we got paid with Bitcoin. We probably transacted in US dollars. So for example, sure, we probably told our international client, pay me $10,000. And that $10,000 was converted into Bitcoin the day of the transfer. Mm-hmm. And that's what you received. That's probably the most likely scenario.
Sure. I don't think,
yeah, people transact in Bitcoin really nowadays because it's just too volatile. It's too difficult to know exactly what the value is.
Yep.
And most companies in the U.S. use U.S. dollar as the understanding their financial situation.
Sure.
So we quote in dollars, we invoice in dollars, whatever it happens to be. A provider pays us in Bitcoin. It gets converted to dollars at the rate, at the current moment, depending, mm-hmm, on the platform that they used. And then you get that Bitcoin into your wallet, and that has a dollar amount the day you get it, and it may have a different dollar amount the day you convert it.
Yes.
So when you convert it, let's say it happens automatic. I don't know. I never use BitPay or any other systems like this, but let's say that's how it works. You get paid and it automatically goes into your bank account. That gets reported as a like a currency exchange, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't, that's one of my challenges is like, is that just money coming in and that's it? Or is there an actual kind of like a security or a trade happening?
Yeah. So excellent question there, Hector. And really sort of so the only guidance out there, right, for how to treat, classify, and then do business with these coins is a 2014 memo from the IRS. And as far as the IRS goes, all of these cryptocurrencies are treated as if they're property. So if I'm paid in Bitcoin, that's one change of ownership. Then if after being paid in that coin, I then convert it back into US dollars via Coinbase, right? So there are two income tax events that just happened. So anytime that a Bitcoin, just for example right here, anytime that a Bitcoin changes ownership or is converted back into US dollars, there's a income tax bill that is due. So it adds that extra layer of complication in the form of compliance and tax reporting if you are taking payment in a Bitcoin format or in any other type of cryptocurrency format.
But essentially, you're not going to be paying tax double, right? So you send the invoice for $10,000. Let's just say that you got the $10,000 equivalent, and let's say it was $9,900, right, at the time of the trade or whatever. So you write off your invoice for the $100 due to foreign exchange cost or whatever. Mm-hmm. So now you have a $9,900 asset. Once you trade it and you exchange it into dollars, let's say you now have $1,100. You technically have your $9,900 of regular income, and then yep. You have $200 in capital gain. That's pretty much what it is, correct?
Yes. Yep.
Now, the challenge is this is a short-term capital gain, and you may have restrictions in terms of when this volume becomes a significant dollar amount, and you have to calculate it with capital losses that, because of IRS rules, you may not be able to take all the losses. You may have to suspend some of the losses to future mm-hmm. years. That's the challenge that we have, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And yeah. Yep. And I'd say really sort of, and from all of the conversations I've had with CPAs and with client firms, that part of it, that piece of it, that sort of tracking of all of those capital gains and losses is where most folks are getting themselves either into hot water or just having a huge amount of extra work.
But if you're an accountant, sometimes you like extra work, right?
Well, yeah.
Especially when you bill sometimes. By the hour. Especially when
you bill exactly. Hour. Especially right. By the hour.
So if I'm a business advisor in the financial world, I'm an accountant, and they come to me and says, "Look, I did this, right? Like, they're not asking me for my advice. They're just saying, how do I fix this? I did this. I received $100,000 worth of Bitcoin, you know, during the regular course of my business." We're not talking about speculators or traders.
No, it's being paid.
We're using Bitcoin as a form of currency. Yep. The work that the accountant has to do if the small business owner doesn't use it, is we're going to have to get a basically a spreadsheet of all the trades, and we have to calculate them just like we do with buying and selling stock, correct?
Yep. Yes. Yeah. Okay. And so the only extra sort of layer in there is that if you're buying stock and selling stock from a E-Trade, right, or a Fidelity or a brokerage, all of those companies have the obligation to then mail out information to you, right?
The 1099-B.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But in this whole cryptocurrency space, those platforms like Coinbase or Binance aren't under that obligation yet. So it's all on you as the accountant to actually go through manually to then go piece that together.
Wait, so as far as you know, you're saying up to last year,
yeah,
Coinbase and these people were not reporting to the IRS your trades? Interesting.
Nope. And actually, all of that was a court case, actually. The IRS sued Coinbase to have him turn over certain records. So, I would point out, though, that the IRS has come out and actually said that in 2018 and in 2019 and going forward, that this enforcement issue on the paying of taxes on gains on these different cryptocurrencies is going to be a priority.
Okay, so the IRS is on it. Hopefully, they're pressing on the large traders, if we can call them that, Coinbase and the other folks, to make sure that they are capturing the social security numbers of the people that have these accounts, so they can report it. Because that's the other challenge: is yes. If they don't ask you for a social security number, how can they even report it?
Yeah. No, true, and again, that point also points back to the whole immaturity still in the ecosystem, right? That 2.5 years ago, 5 years ago, nobody had heard of Coinbase, right? And now they actually just closed either earlier this week or on Friday last week a $300 million capital raise. So all of these companies are now flush with cash, growing and building out their own internal systems and processes. But still, the onus is still on us to make sure that our clients are actually filing accurate data and reporting everything accurately.
And I'm reading off the Coinbase website now, so it looks like they have updated. The way it works is all the U.S. holders of accounts with Coinbase, mm-hmm. if they have at least 200 transactions, yeah. Or a total dollar amount of $20,000 yeah. of trades, they will file a 1099-K,
yes.
which is actually different than a 1099-B. It's going to be interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So that, so for non-tax people, by the way, sorry for throwing all these codes out. You know, these are like, you know, we want to make sure that our clients don't overpay taxes when they're using Bitcoin, and we want to make sure that if Bitcoin is helping them create more commerce, if they can find more providers or more customers. Yeah. that are willing to pay with Bitcoin just because it's easier, not because they are, you know, clandestine money launderers, right? Sure. Because it's easier to pay them with that. We want to advise our clients to take money in. I mean, honestly, as an advisor, I want my clients to have as many sales as possible, right? Yep. As long as it's legal, take it.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm not going to say, oh no, forget it. I'm not going to be your accountant anymore if I have to deal with all this Bitcoin stuff. Because you may have a customer that may be doing really well, you know, with international sales, because this is mostly going to be international stuff. Right? Most US to US will probably default to wire transfer or something like that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Now I'd like to, tell you something, Dr. Shana, maybe you can chime in. Okay. I just talked to a client, less than a week ago, brand new person. I've never even met them before. Okay. And their business model was something I really didn't know existed. It's called the bug bounty business. And what they do is there's let's call it hackers, right, all over the world that are looking for security gaps on people's websites, on people's platforms, and they're looking for ways to basically hack into them and steal information. Mm-hmm. And when they find these bugs, they go back and tell their customers, hey, listen, you have this bug, you have the security gap. We will help you. We will beta test, right, your system, and we will let you know all the bugs and all the security gaps you have. And that's the service. The service is to charge people to finding all the bugs, so then their own internal team can fix, you know, their security gaps.
Okay.
So that was new in itself. But then I found out that the people that are being paid for this work, they're all in like India, Bangladesh, and they only get paid with Bitcoin.
That is interesting.
I thought that was interesting. I wanted to chime in. That was interesting. So the business industry by itself was something that's interesting, but then it's like everybody gets paid with Bitcoin. So I wonder if this is frowned upon in India or Bangladesh, and that's why they want to get paid with Bitcoin, because they don't want it. You know, they don't want it to show what is it that they're doing for a living. I don't see a problem with that, by the way. I think it's great to be told what security bugs I have. I mean, absolutely. Unfortunately, the best way to know when someone has a security gap is to intrude, right? I mean, it's the only way to do it. Doesn't the FBI end up hiring most fraudsters because they're the ones that actually commit the fraud and know how to do it?
Yep.
It's kind of that concept. So I don't see anything wrong with the industry itself, but I thought it was interesting that they're all being paid that way. So either it's easier to pay with Bitcoin, period, because you don't have to pay wire transfer fees. And these people are getting paid $100 a bounty, $50 a bounty. So keep in mind that to wire transfer someone $100 would cost you $50, and that wouldn't make any sense. So what do you think is happening to global commerce with Bitcoin and the heavy reduction of transaction fees?
And I'm happy that you brought this up, actually, because if you want to really get a good handle on the backstory of Bitcoin and the whole cryptocurrency space, they're on Netflix. There's an excellent movie, Banking on Bitcoin, and it's an excellent overview of the history of it and sort of the core purpose of it, and actually a core purpose of Bitcoin from the very beginning. It was to help transmit money overseas, right, outside of the banking sector or outside of having to pay those huge fees per each wire. So I would honestly point out that use case and application is perfectly normal and is a perfectly logical use case of Bitcoin for international payments and payments for goods and services. So yeah, I mean, I am not shocked at all by that, because that was one of the core ideas of Bitcoin and all of those earlier projects that it was built on.
And have you done any research on the use of cryptocurrency in countries in which the inflation rate is so high, the volatility in terms of the valuation of their home currency is so bad that even the citizens prefer to use cryptocurrency over their own home currency? Like, for example, I'll give you an example that's close to home. My home country, Venezuela, has had big issues with the economy over the years. The local currency, it's worth less and less every single day. And on top of that, people just don't trust having that. You hold it for too long. I mean, you're a professor, all the concepts behind the value of money over time. Hold money that's losing value, and you're losing value just by keeping it. So you see the citizens transact in Bitcoin more and more. Like, I even heard a story of someone that went to a food truck, to buy a hot dog, literally, and something that would be worth $3, where they were taking Bitcoin as a form of payment. I mean, in that level of transaction, this is not just big transactions; these are little transactions. You done any research on that?
Yeah. So there are a few points in there. One is that the whole purpose, right, of Bitcoin, or the idea of Bitcoin at the beginning, it was to enable people to actually do business and to trade goods and services for payment in Bitcoin outside of a government or of a third party, like a PayPal or a bank, right? So that was the whole idea of it, to establish this alternative way to do business and to then trade value. So yeah, and I would say that really some of the most interesting applications and use cases are in those countries that are having instability, right? Either at a political side or on a currency side. And to build on that, there are some countries out there that are really quite at the forefront of actually taking Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies as a form of payment for taxes or other debts, right? And all of these examples are international in nature, right? That hasn't really caught on so much yet here in the U.S., but internationally and in areas Eastern Europe, South America, Africa, India, there is more increased interest, right, in actually taking payment as a form of doing commerce, and it does point to those reasons, right? One, it is cheaper, faster, and more efficient, and then two, these transactions aren't always going to be under the purview of a government or of a banking authority, which could be having some credibility issues.
And what do you think it hasn't caught on big in the U.S.? Like what's happening in the U.S. that's different than in these countries? I mean, given the amount of technology we have here, the amount of education we have here, I mean, we have all the resources to really facilitate implementation of anything that's new. This is what this country is built on, innovation. What is it about the U.S. that is taking so long for Bitcoin and stuff to just become mainstream?
I'd say probably the first thing is the treatment of it by the IRS, right? As long as you're going to owe taxes on any time that you're paid in Bitcoin and convert it to dollars or back and forth or even do a crypto for crypto swap, as long as all of those are going to generate tax bills for you as a customer or as a merchant, that is going to hold it back, right? And then two, you know, there is that underlying trust issue too in the whole Bitcoin space, because here in the U.S. there was a lot of bad buzz and bad press right at the very beginning with Silk Road and other sort of connotations of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies being used for money laundering, drug dealing, and other types of really bad activities. So that still is having a impact on the market. And then three, it's basically the lack of institutional support in this case. Now, all of this is changing, right? Coinbase recently just got a custodian license here in NY. And just within the last 2 weeks, Fidelity launched the first institutional platform to allow hedge funds and other institutional groups to invest directly into this whole ecosystem. So I do think that as those larger institutional players move into this space, that by itself is going to help push that regulation from a tax, from a SEC, and from a accounting point of view off the back burner and onto the front burner. And sort of that increasing in certainty on all these issues will help more and more people then adopt these different cryptocurrencies as actual currencies.
And Dr. Sean, what are you doing either in the advisory board for the Wall Street Blockchain Alliance and the AICPA, mm-hmm. and as a professor and also as a consultant, because I'm sure you consult with large firms and companies on this. What are you doing to change this, right? Because you're saying, in a nutshell, 3 points, right? One, it's got bad press. So there's a branding problem with cryptocurrency. Two, there's a fear of tax or regulation. And three, lack of institutional support, which, by the way, it's a tricky one, because institutional support, you're talking about banks, and banks are in the middleman business. And Bitcoin is in the no middleman business. So just to wrap things up, what are you doing proactively? What do you foresee your activities to be in the next couple of years in terms of just helping bring this to the forefront?
I'd say probably the most sort of clear way to summarize what I'm doing is I'm really trying to get is to have those hard conversations, right, as to how to actually regulate these things, how to treat them, how to classify them, and how to show them from a tax point of view and from a financial point of view, right? Because those are the core issues, right, for institutional support, for the IRS, SEC, and for individuals to actually have these out here. So in one sentence, what I'm trying to do is to increase the level of awareness and of certainty as to how this ecosystem is going to be treated. Because if you have certainty, then everything else can happen. But if the ground you're on is uncertain or is shaky, you aren't going to want to invest or to adapt.
Okay, Sean, thank you very much. We got 1 minute left. So give me a Reader's Digest version of your latest book, Strategic Management, Accounting, Delivering Value in a Changing Business Environment Through Integrated Reporting. Sounds like a book from a college professor for sure.
Yeah, right.
What's a Reader's Digest version of that book, if you don't mind? And how can people get in contact with you and your content?
Absolutely. So probably the high-level summary is basically as the business environment changes due to technology and other external forces, it's up to us working in the accounting field to sort of adapt a more comprehensive headset as to, one, help our clients be in compliance from a tax and a financial point of view, but to also harness the efficiencies and the automation driven by AI and RPA and other technology tools to help us give more comprehensive and forward-looking guidance. And so the best way to find me online is on Twitter at Sean Steinsmith. I'm also on LinkedIn at Sean Steinsmith and the Entrepreneurial CPA Show on YouTube and anywhere podcasts are hosted.
Thank you, Sean. I really appreciate you coming on, enlightening us about that. I think I could speak for hours about blockchain. I myself am in the journey of just becoming just better at having these conversations with my clients. It's just, thank you for giving us a frank conversation. It's just not that tangible right now. It's difficult to have that, you know, where we can give that client that answer that says, oh, this is exactly what I need to do with it. But it sounds like we're still just having to make sure that we understand it, that we know what's it all about, and to be ready. Would you, quick question before you leave. Do you think that an accountant 5 years from now, not being, you know, deep in or understanding well blockchain is, could start becoming irrelevant? Do you foresee that in the coming 5 to 10 years?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yes. I mean, what I would say is that anybody who's working in banking, accounting, or in finance is going to have, at the very least, a good sort of baseline knowledge as to how blockchain works. Absolutely. If you don't, or if your firm does not, that is a non-optimal place to be.
And is it safe to assume that you're writing a book about blockchain or not yet?
I am actually right now.
When is that coming out?
That's due out at the end of 2019.
Okay. Well, we'll bring you back on when you finish the book, and maybe we'll get deeper into it. Yep. Dr. Sean, thank you very much, and have a wonderful day.
All right. Thanks.